it's 6:30, so we'll go ahead and get the December 4th meeting of the CIC going. This meeting is being recorded, as always. But we have one other person here, so let's let her in. So, good evening, everyone. So we have a few, well, I think most of us know each other, but there are a couple new people here. So for those who don't know, I'm Matt Stewart. I'm the planning administrator at AMATS. We have several of our other staff here, Heather, Matt, Amelia, Jeff, and Seth. Curtis was unable to make it today because of as his kids get older, the more and more activities scheduled. So he's going to miss out this month's CIC. But for those who are new to this process, so we typically have a few items on our agenda. And we'll go over those. And of course, if you have any questions along the way, please ask. And then we'll just have a time for any other questions or issues that you may have or want to bring up for the good of the order. So without further ado, we'll get started. So both of our items tonight relate to funding. It's kind of a momentous time for AMATS. Most planning agencies, AMATS included, kind of go through cycles where they do different things on a periodic basis. And so in our case, every 2 years, we have a call for funding. And right now, we're basically dealing with four funding sources. And the first three I'm going to talk about here, item A, is our discussion regarding the draft project application scores for our STBG program, our resurfacing program, and our transportation alternatives set aside. So I'm going to go ahead and share our screen and talk a little bit about, give me just a second, please. Okay. Can everyone see the spreadsheet on the screen here?
Yep.
Yes. Okay. So, we're going to talk about three funding sources here. So, the first is our Surface Transportation Block Grant Fund funding, which is kind of tends to be our larger, more transformative projects in general. And this year we had 23 applicants apply for the funding. The total request was about $90 million. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of $11 million or a little bit more that we will likely feel comfortable programming based on the revenues we expect to receive. So the list you're looking at right now, it's kind of like the top of the list is currently our top scoring project. And then the last, we're looking at the wrong spreadsheet here. And then the last project would be like our lowest ranked project. Now these can change. So there are certain things where like we give our communities the opportunity to review all these for accuracy to make sure we either didn't make a mistake or if they think we left something off based on what they submitted, and the points could change on these. And so we have a process built in. So right now we're sharing these with all our committees. And then 2 months from now, 1 month from now, we have a smaller subcommittee that meets to kind of talk through any of those types of issues that I just talked about. And then we'll be bringing them to our committees in February to vote. So like I said, we had almost $90 million in requests under STBG. Where that line is of projects that get funded versus not funded, it's kind of up to our committees to decide. But what we sort of expect is that we'll be programming somewhere in the neighborhood of $11 to $12 million. We could go a little bit above that if our committees feel comfortable doing that. So second up is our resurfacing program. And with that, we had 39 projects. And that's pretty typical. That's very similar to last year. I think we had right around 40 projects last year also. They were asking in total for $32 million. This program, we allow just basic resurfacing of roadways. Communities can get $1 million for their project. That can go up a little bit if they, it doesn't really matter for this, but there, we have an incentive program where they can reduce their local share if they deliver within a certain time window. So anyway, basically we figure about $1 million each. And here's our list. One of the things I forgot to point out with STBG, and it's also pertinent here with resurfacing, if you reviewed the meeting packet before the meeting, like what was on our website, there were a few very minor changes to the projects and the rankings. Any of these things you see in the orange cells here, those are things that change. So like in this example, we determined, oh, we actually miscalculated the pavement condition index, like the condition of the pavement. So it's actually a little worse than what we had. So because of that, this moved up the list a little bit. And there were a couple little things with STBG also. And some of these things could change as communities bring up other points or say, hey, like we actually were going to be putting this into our project, but somehow they didn't convey it or that kind of thing. So finally, and I know this is something that folks tend to be kind of excited about, we have our TASA projects, which is Transportation Alternative Set Aside. These are projects that tend to be bicycle and pedestrian only projects that benefit those modes of transportation. So this year is actually, so in 2023, when we did this before, this was a very competitive program. I think we had 20 folks that asked for money. We were only able to give money for three projects. This time we actually only had 9 applications, and we think we might be able to fund 4 of these. So that's actually pretty good. But like with resurfacing, our cap is $1 million. The 9 applicants, total ask was $8.8 million over those 9 projects. And so this is currently our order of projects. So like I said, we'll be discussing this in January with our TAC TIP subcommittee and then bringing it to our committees in February. So this is what we received for this year, and we're looking forward to funding a lot of these projects. So I'll pause right there and ask, are there any questions?
Can you elaborate on the TASA awardees?
Yeah, so, Ron, that was you that asked, I assume?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry, yeah, so I can't get my camera on here.
If you're able to see the screen here, so yeah. Currently this is our ranking based on the scoring criteria and carefully going over the applications. And by the way, like each one of these, we had multiple staff looking at. The TASA especially is complex, so we had a whole crew of, what was it, 5 of us in a room, 4, yeah, 5 of us in a room, kind of going through each of these projects. And when judgment calls needed to be made, we had to make sure that we're scoring consistently and fairly and objectively. So right now it stands that Rubber City Heritage Trail Phase 4 is our top ranked project. I don't expect that to change. Because
sorry, Matt, you did have one question in the chat. I don't know if I missed you answering it already.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Jeff answered it in the chat.
Okay. Right now I can't see it because I'm sharing my screen, but what was the question? Or is, if it's answered, I guess we're good for now. But yeah, you can see on the screen here, like Rubber City Phase 4 is our top ranked project. It's looking like the remaining top 4 are building a widened sidewalk along a section of Graham Road and Stowe. This would be from Baird to Fish Creek, so kind of toward the eastern side, closer to the Fish Creek intersection. Green has a Steese Road sidewalk extension, which is also like a widened sidewalk. And then the city of Fairlawn, this is another widened sidewalk or side path, as they're sometimes called, mostly along West Market Street. It's where sidewalks already exist, but this would be improving the sidewalk.
Thank you.
Sure. So, and like I said, these are in the meeting packet. There have been a few small changes. I don't think there are any changes to the TASA program from what's online. And let me look here. Sorry I missed the question in the chat, but good question, Andy. Yeah, so I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, basically it's just we're programming it, basically saying we're giving it the money and scheduling it to occur in a fiscal year. So basically programming means it's moving forward.
Okay. I don't know if this is the best venue for me to ask this, but I was just wondering, like, the overall timeline of, like, how these projects work. So I'm guessing there were some, I guess, you said, like, municipalities submitted, I don't know if they planned or ideas or whatever, and then, like, you guys are touching it, and then there's other stages. So I don't know if it's worth going into that or take it offline, your call.
I didn't quite understand what – are you asking,
sorry.
Like – how they make y'all, the decisions on what to apply for, or
no. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So my question is, so, programming is approving and scheduling funding for a project. So I was just wondering, like, from what you said, it sounds like say Akron or Kent or, well, not Kent, but you get the idea. Some city submits, like, we would like a street improvement at this street or whatever. I'm just wondering, like, what are the stages? Like, does it start with the city and then goes to you? And then, like, if you're programming it, like, what happens after that point? Like, kind of overview of that.
No. That's a good question. And definitely we can kind of walk back a little bit. So we do a call for projects every 2 years. And so prior to that point, like, each community might be different, how they make their decisions about, you know, Akron deciding, hey, we want to bring forward Rubber City Heritage Trail Phase 4. And, like, they applied for Waterloo Road for a big STBG project. Like, they make whatever decisions to say, we want to move forward Waterloo Road. We think it's going to score well versus, like, Exchange Street or some other project that they might have on the books. They basically make whatever decisions on what they think is going to be their best project and be most competitive for the funding source they're applying for. And then we get our lists, which I was just showing. That's like everyone that applied. This was back in November that the applications were due. And then we score them based on our scoring criteria. And of course, like, the ones that score the highest are those that end up getting programmed. So from there, basically, once our committees approve those projects in February, it's basically programmed, you know, officially programmed. They have a few things, official things they need to do on the ODOT side, like getting, you know, the project set up and getting a project manager assigned and all that stuff. Then over the next few years, generally the more complex a project is, the longer it takes to go through design and go through all the different federal requirements, like sometimes right-of-way acquisition, utility clearance, environmental review, final design, preliminary engineering, all those different phases of the project occur. So the projects that we're looking at now, even though we're doing funding here in late 2025, those aren't going to occur until fiscal year 2030 and 2031. So they're basically like 5 years in the future. Some of the projects may be able to move up a little bit, especially our resurfacing projects. We have flexibility in our system to kind of move projects up, but right now they're basically 5 years into the future. And so that's kind of what occurs over the next few years. And then, assuming everything goes on schedule, then they construct the project when the time comes. And then also in between now and then, we have like several touch points where we have project review meetings to make sure the project's on track. And if the sponsors need to kind of like move on something or their engineers that are working for them, we're able to kind of all talk, you know, ODOT and AMATS and the sponsor and make sure it's moving forward. So does that all make sense? And I guess more importantly, does that answer your question?
Yeah, one follow-up. So is it just up to the city of, like, who or how they're, like, sending those proposals over to you? Like, how are they designated?
Exactly, yeah. So each community is different. They have their own processes. You know, there might be some communities where it's, like, one or two people, like a mayor and a service director or something, saying, like, yeah, we're going to do this. And some may have a very collaborative process. Some may be, you know, we don't always know what, actually, we usually don't know what the process is that communities choose which projects to apply for funding.
Okay. And then I don't know how to word this, but, like, so you have this funding process every 2 years. So, like, is AMATS interacting with these cities outside of that 2-year cycle? Like, let's say a community isn't part of this current funding cycle. Like, how are they
interacting with you? Yeah, no, that's a really good question too. So one of the ways we do, I mean, the answer is yes, but one of the most notable ways we do that. So every 5 years we update our long range plan. And part of that process is we go out and meet with the communities to kind of just talk about their future goals and, like, hey, what are your priorities? Like, what do you think you're interested in doing over the next 20 years? Because that's what our planning window is for our long-range plan. But at that time, we're really able to talk with the community leaders or whoever is at those meetings about, you know, what their goals and things they want to accomplish are. And we're able to kind of give them advice or say, like, hey, you know, this could be a really good project here because it checks these boxes, or it could fix safety this way, or sometimes we'll even weigh in, like, hey, have you thought about doing this project this way? Because, you know, we're noticing a lot of this type of crash or something, and adding this to it might help solve that type of crash pattern or those kinds of things. But ultimately, it's up to the communities. I mean, they're the ones that make the decisions on what's important to them. We have our own funding criteria that are important to our committee, to our organization, which I like to think, you know, gives us the types of projects we want to see. But that's really ultimately up to them how much they follow that advice or how, you know, how they make those decisions.
Okay, that's super helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions about these three funding sources and the application process? Oh, I saw a question in the chat box. Is there a single spreadsheet that shows all TASA projects funding from present to 2030? So, Pete, are you talking about, like, old projects that are already funded?
Yeah, I just wondered if there's some central location where you could see everything that made it to the top of the list from, you know, 2024, 2025 until the cycle.
Yeah, so there are a couple different ways we show that. So any of the old projects that got TASA funding are on our TIP. So that can be viewed on our website. Amelia on our staff developed a TIP, basically like a TIP web map. But you wouldn't necessarily, I don't remember, Amelia, if there's a way to specifically break out TASA projects on that. There's probably not, but, like, basically anything that's bicycle and pedestrian focused would be our top projects. If you're interested, I could also share with you, like, prior funding rounds, like, of 2021 and 2023. So you could see, like, hey, who submitted and which ones made the cut and that kind of thing, if that's interesting to you.
Yeah, someone just typed that it might be in the packet we looked at, and I just didn't look at that sheet or forgot I looked at it.
Yeah, so if you are talking about current ones, like the ones that are coming for funding, yeah, that's in the packet, and that's what I shared on the screen a little bit ago. So I guess that's the question. Are you asking about the ones that are asking for funding now, or are you curious about, like, who's applied in the past and who made the cut in the past?
Oh, yeah, I'm curious about who's, like, who has funding for 2025, who has funding for the next year and the next year and the next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it gets, like, a little complicated because the way – we don't have a super clean way where we can say, like, well, we kind of do. We, Amelia, could we, on our web map, is there a way that we can pull up specifically bike and pedestrian projects? Does that allow that? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that has the functionality. And if not, I can definitely add that. That would be a great addition. And I know that the projects do, when you click on them, it will show you the funding sources as well.
So I can do that live right now, or I could just shoot you an email later, like tomorrow or, you know, sometime, just saying, like, here's where you go to find out that, if that's of interest to you. But if you want to look at it now, great. We can. What's that?
If other people want to look at it now, great. Otherwise, you know, later is fine. I just like to keep abreast of where different, you know, trails and things are in the planning stages and construction stages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind looking at it now.
Okay. Yeah. So there are a couple different ways we could do that. You might be quicker than me, Amelia or Seth, but I can remind me again, because the, give me just a second here.
I'm working on it, Matt.
Oh, okay. Pull it up. I just pulled up the web map if you want me to share the screen, but it might make more sense for you guys to do it just because you can probably get to those types of projects. I guess that, yeah, you do have that, Amelia, transportation enhancement. So it'd be all the blue projects. But do you mind running that, one of you guys, just so you can turn off layers and stuff? You can do that more efficiently than I can.
Matt, just to cut in, can I cut in real quick?
Yeah, sure.
The annual list of federally obligated projects of 2025, like, we have that, and that has a list of all of the highway and bike and ped and I think transit projects.
Yeah, that's another way. And that's, like, obligations a little bit different, because that's basically just
–
But it's the same thing in a way, like, because it's projects that are moving forward, or that the government said, like, okay, we are giving you this money in this fiscal year, and that money has been officially authorized on their side. So it's like there are different ways to look at it. So I think what we'll see once Seth kind of gets this ready to go.
Can you guys see my screen?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so the thing that I'm running into is we don't have a way to
correct me if I'm wrong.
I can't turn off everything that's not, like, I can go into the legend and see which ones are which matches into the work category, but what I can't do is I cannot filter or limit what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Is that something that you have built into this, Amelia? Is that maybe on the demographics side where we can change that?
I don't think they're parsed out by that, but I think there is a way for us to add a selection.
We should be able to create a filter.
Filter, yeah.
One way or another, and that's something that doesn't currently exist, but it is doable. So what we're looking at is you can select any of the blue dots or blue lines, and that will tell you where there is a TASA project that's currently scheduled on RTIP, currently has funding. So right now I'm looking at a bridge in Kent that is slated for 2029. It's got fund type where it's coming from, but it is, because of it being a transportation enhancement project, it is a TASA project, it's going to be blue on your map.
I know Rubber City Phase 3 should be on there, and
that is right.
Less that if it's not on there, that must be because we had to push it outside. Or no, it is on there. Yeah. No, it is.
Yeah.
there. So this and is then, our
Rubber City Heritage Trail Phase 3, and it's got TASSA. We've got scheduling or funding scheduled for 26, 28, and 29 for all of those. So,
and then the third project that we funded 2 years ago, or out, you know, programmed for funding 2 years ago, was the Headwaters Trail up in the Manaway area. So that's an extension of the path that goes between Garrettsville and eventually will go into Aurora, and then hopefully connect into Solon and up into that trail system.
So is that phase eight you're talking about there?
I believe it is phase eight, yeah.
That's the one that's actually following the old rail trail.
So that's the one that currently is, that phase is projected to be basically a side path along Mennonite Road and whatever the other road is. I can't think of it right now.
Manaway
Pioneer Trail.
Yeah.
But that's
phase nine that you're talking about. That's the one that's going to be on the road.
Yeah, and that one's scheduled for 29. We do not have phase eight currently on the map.
Yeah, because they got other funding outside of EMS for that. And that was the funding that actually, I think that's already built, if I'm correct, Pete.
Well, phase eight is, they're supposed to start it maybe this fall.
Okay.
There is a path there, but it's, it's not really usable.
And so the other thing, the thing that won't be reflected in this map, so this is just showing our current TIP, but we also have previously funded TASSA projects, one of which, you know, Ron is very familiar with, the Veterans Trail in the city of Hudson and Stowe, which is kind of on pause right now, which I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's another project that's like in the pipeline.
Actually, there's two, Matt, one from 2019 and 2021.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
2019 is Stowe. 2021 is Hudson and Stowe.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, so.
I just pasted the link to the map online or in the chat for anyone that's interested.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we're not able to fund as many of those projects as we would like to. Of the three funding sources I just discussed, TASSA is the smallest, but I do feel like we're able to put like a bigger dent in it this time around than last time around, because A, we have a little bit more funding to work with, and B, we had fewer people apply for the funding this year for whatever reason. So I feel better that like we can actually fund like almost half of our requests, whereas last year we funded 3 out of like 20. So sometimes it just works out that way. So any other questions? Okay, well, if not, I will move on to our second item, which also is related to funding. So those three funding sources are like totally AMATS controlled. You know, our agency, and by our agency, I mean staff, but especially our members, because they're ultimately the ones approving this. They come up with our scoring criteria, deciding what's important and all that stuff. This other program I'm going to talk about is our Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Program. This is another federal funding source. It's actually a pretty large source for AMATS, but the process of approving projects kind of goes through a statewide committee where AMATS, along with the other 7 large MPOs in the state of Ohio, kind of work together to program projects for each of our regions. So because of that, the whole process is a little bit different. But just to walk you through that real quick, so in July, we had applications due for that program. We received 19 projects, which was higher than both 2 years ago and 4 years ago. So we had quite a few projects this time. Total request of just over $69 million. We expected we would have around $12.5 million to program for projects. So that gives you a sense of how few of our projects we were going to be able to fund. So like with the other programs, staff got together to score what we could. We can't score everything because it is a statewide program and, you know, those decisions kind of have to be made at a statewide level. But all the scoring criteria that were cut and dry and that we could just score on our own, we did. We brought that score with us. Jeff and I went down to Columbus in late October to meet with a statewide committee that, you know, figures all of this out. Through that process, we ended up doing pretty well. We were able to over-program a bit. So we were actually able to fund five of our projects totaling $14.2 million. So if you remember before I said we thought we had around $12.5 million. So we were able to, you know, get a little more. We advocated for this one project to get full funding. And so we kind of just went down the list of where that committee ended up, and we were able to move forward five projects. Those are in the memo that was, you know, attached to this meeting packet. But if you haven't had a chance to review, here are the five projects. So two of them were transit projects.
Are you sharing the transportation improvement program? That's what I'm seeing on my screen. Am I in the wrong place here?
I don't think anyone's sharing the screen right now. At least I'm not seeing anything.
The link that's in the chat is the link to the map that I was displaying earlier.
Yes. So I don't know. Maybe you're looking at that, Ron.
Maybe.
So I didn't have any visual aids for this, although if we have any questions about the projects, I'm happy to pull up anything, you know, if you're interested. But we funded two transit projects. Both were for bus purchases for each of our transit agencies. Metro RTA will be receiving three compressed natural gas buses, PARTA, which is Portage County's Transit Authority, four clean diesel buses. The city of Cuyahoga Falls got money for the Barney's Busy Corners intersection. If you know where that is, it's the big six-way intersection, just outside or just basically next to where the Chapel Hill Mall used to be. The city of Stowe, would receive funding for a roundabout project at Fish Creek and Stowe Roads. And then finally, the city of Twinsburg, a citywide signal project that would involve centralized control, replacement of vehicle detection, a few other components, and just other miscellaneous things related to upgrading their signals across the city. So we were able to get funding for those five projects, and assuming our policy committee, you know, officially approves that next week, which I have no idea why they would not, we will have those additional five projects in the books.
What was that funding source
again? It's called congestion mitigation and air quality funding. It's a source that has existed for a really long time. I don't know, Jeff, you might know, did that come out with Ice-T in 1991 or is it not quite that old?
Exactly.
Oh, I can't hear you, Jeff.
That is the case.
That is the case?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's been around for over 30 years, but it's, projects that go toward, reducing emissions or improving air quality. So there's the application process is a lot more involved because you basically have to demonstrate, you know, carbon reduction and emissions benefits, that sort of thing. But so we fund a wide variety of projects with that. A lot of times signal type projects are in there. Sometimes there are additional like projects that have, you know, new turn lanes or that sort of thing. Roundabout projects often can be used for this funding, bus purchases. It tends to go toward those types of projects most commonly.
Thank you.
Sure. So that's all I had for today. That's all that's on our agenda, but I'm sure there are other questions you may have. Please, anything you'd like to talk about for the good of the order, we'd like to hear it.
Did you say for Barney's Busy Corners, is that up in Chapel Hill with like Howe Ave, Northwest, Britain
yep.
coming together?
Exactly. Okay. That intersection.
Is that an approved project or what's the status of that?
Yeah. It was approved by the statewide committee. The last step in the process is for our policy committee next week to officially approve those, but like, I have no reason why they wouldn't, because it's like, of course we want to get projects for our region. So basically, yes.
Okay. And that's a roundabout for that intersection?
No, that project is just a signal upgrade.
Oh, okay.
The roundabout project is at Stowe Road and Fish Creek Road in the city of Stowe.
Got it.
I don't have a question, but I have some information to share if anybody would.
Sure, anybody absolutely.
It's Ron Brubaker from Task Force. I've been attending meetings with the Metro RTA and talking to Summit County and Summit Metro Parks. What's been happening there is that Metro RTA made a proposal to the Federal Transportation Agency to reimburse them $12.5 million in two payments, one now and one at the end of 2027, to pay them back for grants that they made to buy three rail lines, the Akron Secondary Line, the Freedom Line, and the Sandyville Line. FTA accepted that proposal on November 18th and said they would agree to that. Metro, as part of that proposal, said that we think there's some missing parcels in the appraisal that was made. So FTA says, okay, pay us the $6 million now, and the promise to pay the balance at the end of 2027, and in 30 days, do a reappraisal of these so that we can be sure what we're talking about here. I don't know why it took Metro RTA almost 2 years to figure out that there was flaws in the appraisal. They had two appraisals done.
Right.
And we're not sure. They think there's missing parcels. Metro RTA thinks there's missing parcels in there, but maybe the parcels are combined and they're not actually missing. So they're going to try to sort that out with a new appraisal. The board of Metro RTA approved the first $6 million payment, and I think that is or has been made to FTA, and now they're going to start a reappraisal. FTA said it has to be done in 30 days. Metro doesn't think it can be done in 30 days, but they think if they contract with somebody and explain that they're moving forward with it, FTA will extend the deadline on that, which will probably happen. So they're committed to paying the FTA back. However, they would like to sell these properties. They want to be out of the business of owning rail properties. They've made that abundantly clear. They're done with rail. So they're soliciting bids for anybody who can, is interested in buying these right-of-ways. If Metro can, convey these properties to a public entity like a city or a county or some other public entity, they can negotiate that on their own. If it isn't a public entity, let's say if Task Force wanted to buy the Akron Secondary Line, before that can happen, it has to go out for public auction. I think it has to go on the government website for transactions like this. I can't think of the name of it right offhand. Federal Register. I think it has to go in the Federal Register.
Oh, okay.
And go through a process there. It seemed like Summit County was interested in pulling something together to buy one of these rail lines, probably the Akron Secondary Line. I get limited information from Brian Nelson at Summit County. He's the chief of staff to Eileen Shapiro.
Yes.
I talked to him by email and phone messages. He doesn't seem like he's really wants task force all that involved, and he's very cautious with the information he provides. But they had a meeting with First Energy in Cuyahoga Falls because First Energy had indicated an interest in buying an easement or maybe buying the right-of-way so that they could put a power transmission line on it. I think they had that meeting on the 17th of November, and it, from what I heard, it turned out that First Energy doesn't want to buy the right-of-ways, but they are interested in having an easement on it. And then there was supposed to be another meeting on the 24th, hosted by Summit County, with the communities along that Akron Secondary Line, which would be Hudson Stowe, Cuyahoga Falls, Silver Lake, and Akron, to talk about how they could generate some revenue by buying this land and what interest in it was there for purchasing these parcels from Mentor RTA.
And that already occurred, Ron?
It was supposed to be on Monday the 24th. I think okay. That's the right.
Yeah, I didn't know about that, but that's good to know.
Well, as it turns out, I heard from Tom Sheridan, the city manager of Hudson, who said he was going to the meeting, that the meeting was in fact canceled because First Energy couldn't make it to the meeting. I don't know anything more than that about it. I wrote to Brian Nelson today and said, is the meeting, you know, I heard the meeting was canceled. Do you plan to reschedule a meeting with the communities? And I said in my email that if you're not, would you mind if task force convened a meeting of these communities to talk about buying basically the Akron Secondary Line? I've not heard back from him. Let me just check my mail right now. I don't expect. Oh, here it is. He says we are rescheduling. Okay, so they're going to reschedule that meeting. So there you go. Summit County is kind of leading an effort to form a coalition, I'll call it, of parties, which I think would be those communities, to buy those parcels from Metro RTA.
Okay.
Hey, Ron, is that the future route of the Veterans Trail?
It is.
Okay.
The Akron Secondary Line is the name of the rail line. The Veterans Trail is the name of the trail that would be built on that right of way.
Got it. Got it.
Who was that asking the question? I'm curious.
My name's Pete Mullen. I am a volunteer for Portage Parks, and I have a website called bikeportage.com that just focuses on trails and trail connections in the area.
I'm going to look that up, Peter, and we have a website called taskforce.org, T-A-S-C, not K, T-A-S-C, Trail Advocates of Summit County, Force, taskforce.org. We need to talk.
Sure.
Nick, I see you have a question.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask a follow-up of Ron. That meeting that's being rescheduled, did you say that that is for public input, like of the community members?
I don't think so. I have pressed Brian Nelson pretty aggressively, asking could we be involved in this meeting? And he says no. just the communities, probably Summit Metro Parks, and Summit County.
But when you say communities, is that administration? That's not public input, right?
Well, for Hudson, it would be the city manager. In the other communities, I don't know. It could be mayors, city engineers, but not general public. And who's that asking that question? I'm sorry, my camera's not working.
Oh, that's okay. This is Nick Muffet. I take some notes for Signal Akron, and so if it was a call for public comment, I just wanted to make sure that I got that in my notes. But thank you for sharing.
What's the name of your publication again?
It's not my publication. I serve as a documenter for Signal Akron. They send some of us to take notes on some of these public meetings, and I just wanted to make sure that I'm capturing anything that was of public interest.
Got it. I think I've talked to somebody else from Signal Akron at Metro RTA meetings. In any case, I've also talked to Summit Metro Parks about this, and what they're interested in is in buying right-of-ways, particularly the Freedom Trail. There's three, right? The Akron Secondary that runs from Hudson down to Akron. There's the Freedom that runs from Akron out to Kent and beyond to Ravenna. And then there's the Sandyville line that runs from Akron to Canton. The Freedom Secondary line has the Freedom Trail built on it. It's there, operated by Summit Metro Parks. Very successful trail. I asked Lisa King and Mark Zeremet from Summit Metro Parks whether they were discussing buying that. And they acknowledged that they're having conversations, but they weren't committing that they were going to buy it or that they were really committed to buying it. They have a lease right now. I think it's a 50-year lease. One person said it ended in 2039. The other said it ended in 2059. I kind of think 2059 is the end date of the lease. So if Metro RTA sells the Freedom Secondary line to somebody, I don't know who would buy it, that buyer would have to honor that lease until 2059, let's say, and they could continue to operate a Metro Parks trail on that line. So I don't think some of Metro Parks is too worried about buying it because they have that lease. The third trail is the Sandyville line that goes from Akron all the way down to Canton, which is well out of Summit County. It goes into Stark County down to Canton, but it's all owned by Metro RTA. That's the one they want the most money for, like $6 million for that right of way. And yet they have a lease on that line with ABC, Akron, Barberton, Canton Rail Lines, which is owned by Wheeling Northwestern.
Wheeling
and Lake Erie. Yeah, those two are, one owns the other, and they're both together. Somehow they have a 99-year lease on that property. Metro RTA loses, on average, every year for the last 10 years, $200,000 a year maintaining that. It generates some revenue, but it's a big money drain for Metro RTA to own it. It's hard to imagine anybody would want to buy that with a 99-year lease on it and have to pay for the maintenance on that line with the revenue being a couple trains a week, maybe.
What line is that? Sorry?
Sandyville line. Goes from downtown Akron to Canton. It would make a great trail at some point, but this little rail line runs a couple of cars to like four or five companies down there, and that they have this 99-year lease, and Metro is not able to get out of that lease. The lease is not, they can't get out of it, so they're stuck with it for the rest of 99 years, paying for the maintenance to keep this rail line open for this little tiny railroad to run a couple rail cars down there couple times a week. It's crazy and sad, but.
Yeah, they also, it's ABC, which is a subsidiary of WNLE. They also run that little line that runs out along the Portage Hike and Bike. It ends out, I think it ends out at Route 88 out in Ravenna. But it's probably one train a week or one train a month or something like that that runs out there. And they tore up the bike trail.
Oh, Portage Bike and what you're calling Portage Bike and Hike is the extension of the Freedom Trail in Summit County.
Well, it will connect, yeah. So there is the part that runs through to downtown Kent, and then there's the part that runs from downtown Kent out to Peck Road
in Ravenna Township. Right?
Yeah. And the ABC Railroad has a spur that runs out that way. And recently they were doing some trail work back in the spring or some track work, and they dug up the railroad crossing out on that bike trail, and they just replaced it with loose gravel. And nobody's been able to get it fixed. So it's unclear if it's the city that's supposed to fix it or if it's the railroad. But I've been reminding people about it, but we haven't had any progress on getting things done yet there.
Yeah, I remember you bringing that up at a past, probably like 4 months ago, Pete.
Oh, it was a long time ago.
Someone brought that up a while ago.
It's been a couple years, hasn't it?
Well, they had a nice asphalt crossing going across there, and then I think they were replacing ties. I think they were digging up old rotten ties, and they had to cut the asphalt to do that. Assuming they had to do that. But then it's unclear whether the railroad then is supposed to replace the asphalt or whether the city of Ravenna that maintains that piece is responsible for it. And it's also weird because that little piece of land is also in Ravenna Township. So it's really unclear who is supposed to fix it. But they put down this coarse gravel, which was not great. And then after people complained that they were having trouble getting across the tracks, they then went back and put down like a 4-inch layer of fine gravel on top of it. And it's not bike path gravel. It's just like loose gravel.
And how long ago was that?
What's that?
How long ago was that recently?
It was in the spring, I think, is when we noticed the problem. And I keep an eye on that trail for Portage Parks. I go out there quite a lot. So I look at it every time I'm out there, and it's no change. They put... The city of Ravenna put a couple of cones up. That's about it.
Huh. Interesting.
Well, thank you for that update, Ron. I had like heard rumors that some of that stuff was going on, that Metro was just going to go ahead and start paying back. But this is the most substantial update I've heard from anyone. We haven't, unless Matt, you've heard something recently. I know, like, we haven't heard anything directly from Metro RTA, at least as of a few weeks ago.
They were actually trying to process the payment 2 days ago, but they didn't know whether to go through the clearinghouse or to actually write a check. And they were worried about, like, I don't know. So, but they're in the process of sending over $6 million. So
good. Okay. Well, that's progress. I mean, that's kind of what we expected was going to end up happening, but it's good to know there's movement on that and that their board decided to just kind of like move ahead with that, because that gets us one step closer, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so.
So I noticed, I don't think it will automatically kick us off, but I noticed on our Teams, I just had a thing that said 5 minutes left on your meeting. So probably should start wrapping up, but and I definitely don't mean to cut you off, Ron. If there's certainly if you have more to share, definitely can. But also wanted to just ask, are there any other questions or things that anyone wants to share before we adjourn here?
Yeah, I had a couple quick ones. Can y'all hear me?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so building off, someone mentioned the rail line going south to Canton. I don't know if it's the same rail line, but is that the same as what used to be like the Cuyahoga Valley Scenic Railway southern point?
I believe so, yeah. That does connect, yeah.
Yeah, because what I wanted to bring up is, like, there's some rumblings that up in Cleveland, they want to, I guess it'd be Cleveland Metro Parks, wants to extend the rail line from downtown Cleveland into what's currently the northern tip of the scenic railway. They're kind of marketing it, or they're angling it as, like, just, like, purely a scenic railway, but for the purposes of this meeting, I would want to raise the possibility that, you know, like, Akron up to Cleveland could be a decent commuter rail if you do it right. I'm sure there's, like, a million things that go into that, so, I mean, that's why this is a quick thing and not a deep dive, but I just wanted to raise that. There's actually, I'll put a link. The person who I've seen that seems to know the most about this is this neotrans.blog with a dash in there. So I put
And I've actually read some of their articles about the progress of, like, because there was that study that I think NOAACA funded much of that or most of that. And so that's actually how I've been getting a lot of the information on that process is through them. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, my angle on that is, like, because from what I'm hearing, it's like they're trying to make it, like, pencil out, and the way the costs are structured is, like, oh, it's going to cost a lot of money. So I can't speak to any of that, but what I can speak to is, well, yeah, you might get more value out of it if it's not just a scenic rail, but if it's also commuter. So that's all I had to say about that at this point.
Yeah, okay.
I just wanted to raise that. And then also some kind of logistics stuff. So, you might remember I wasn't able to join the prior version of this meeting due to some technical difficulties. I was wondering if, maybe someone could look into, since this is hosted on Teams, like making it something kind of like a public web link or like a public calendar link where people could just click it and like it gets added to their calendar. And as new meetings are added, they're just like automatically added to the calendar instead of having to like email out to get that.
We can look into that. I know, Seth, I'll kind of ask you for some of the history on this, but like, we specifically have kind of kept it, you know, we try to make it as open as possible by saying, if you'd like to join, you know, let us know. I know there, with you, there was that big mishap last time, which I, very apologetic that happened, but we typically like to make sure that we're letting people into the meeting and not just doing a public thing to prevent it from like being taken over by like, I guess you don't really see that as much now, but I know like during the pandemic, you were seeing a lot of people like taking over Zoom meetings and like playing pornography or like making lewd comments and stuff like that. So that's kind of the history of why we do it this way. Doesn't mean that we can't look into other options. I would say for now, we want to, like, if there is anybody that you're aware of or anyone in anyone's circles who is interested, you know, just reach out to us and we'll make sure that you're on our, like, email list. And once you're on it, you'll get reminders each month. Basically, once you're on that list, you'll always know when a meeting's coming up because we will send you an email, you know, a day or two before.
Just to kind of add to that, Matt, I think we can discuss it a little bit more internally, but we could potentially talk about additional ways of sending the invitation rather than sending it as a link, actually sending it as a meeting invitation. I think we could probably try that. We'll just have to discuss the logistics internally on how to go about doing that.
Yeah.
Because then it would go to the same list of people. But instead of it going as an email with a link, it would go as a meeting invitation rather than that. So I think we can try doing that because we haven't put any of the 2026 meetings in yet. So we could attempt to incorporate the current mailing list into the invitation list.
I like that idea because then I could go to my calendar and open the meeting invite on the calendar and find the link. I don't have to go find an email somewhere.
Yeah.
In my email.
And that's how we can do it already internally. So like,
So we can discuss that as far as the logistics as we're building out the calendar for 2026.
Yeah. Let's circle back tomorrow, Seth, on that. But I like that idea. I mean, if that would help people. I know that's not exactly what you were talking about, Andy, but I would say for now, you know, if there are others that you're aware of who might potentially be interested in future CIC meetings, you know, just let us know those people and we'll make sure that you're added to the email list so that you'll be able to, everyone will get the reminder you did, you know, 2 days ago when Carrie sent it out. So that can help for short term anyway.
Yeah, that's good. And then I see the meetings being recorded. Does that get like sent out to the attendees or does anything happen with that?
It does not. It's just used so that Carrie can type up the notes or the minutes of the meeting.
It is also added to our website.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We do an audio recording on the website. I forgot about that. Thanks, Heather.
Andy, who are you with?
I'm with Vision Zero Akron. So we just started up this past summer. We're trying to get our first big project. Assuming you can load our website, is a on Memorial Parkway. We'd like to see some like physical barriers to connect the kind of last 1,000 feet between the Towpath Trail and Euler Ave up there. So yeah, cycling advocacy, I guess.
Encourage you to look at our website, and I'll look you up as well.
Yeah, I put my email in the chat. I'll put it in there again, but just join at visionzeroakron.org should do it.
Visionakron0.org. Thank you.
Vision Zero Akron. Check the chat.
So, yeah, sounds like we're all kind of, or at least this month, you know, all our attendees are into the same kinds of things, advocacy for bicycle safety and additional bicycle places to bicycle. So that's good that we're all connected, I guess. So anything else? I see we're a little after 7:30. It didn't kick us off, so that's good. But are there any other questions or issues before we adjourn?
Happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah, you too, Ron. Yeah, and thank you all for taking the time to meet. I hope you all have a great holiday season. And as always, let us know anytime you have any questions. Otherwise, we'll see you at future CIC meetings.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.